Hello, everybody. So I think, as most of you know, the reason I'm giving this talk now is that I didn't have the technical capability of making the recorders work the first time around, so trying again. So when I was giving this the first time, it was right before the Feast of Saints Peter and Paul, so it was a fairly obvious choice to go with something about the lives of Saints Peter and Paul. So I decided to give a talk on practical lessons from the lives of Saints Peter and Paul. So to start off by talking about what this talk isn't, it is not an exhaustive catalog of everything that Peter and Paul ever did in their lives, and it is not an in-depth investigation of their theology, which is, you know, far beyond me. And fortunately, I did entitle it Practical Lessons, Not Deep Theology, from the Lives of Saints Peter and Paul. So what the talk is, though, is the result of basically just reading through most or all of the New Testament history and a few other things involving these two apostles, and then just an attempt to learn things from their lives that we can use to become better Christians ourselves. So I'm going to be looking at three main points. The first, concerning St. Peter, it's very, very obvious if you're just reading through the New Testament and paying attention to St. Peter, is the one thing he always desired was to be with Christ. But sometimes things got in his way so that he wasn't able to do the thing that he greatly desired. So basically, what we're going to look at here is his desire to be with Christ, what got in his way, and his realization eventually that the only way to be united to Christ is through the cross. And only by accepting that cross could Peter be eternally united with Christ, which was his one great desire. With St. Paul, it was a little harder to choose a major theme, but eventually I chose to concentrate on his own words in the 1 Corinthians 13 passage about love never fails. And I was just looking at his life in terms of God's pursuit of him in love through various people, and then directly through the vision when he meets St. Paul, or Saul at the time, on the road to Damascus, and how that steadfast love of God towards Paul is transformed into him, into this steadfast love for God, and in that love for Gentiles and Jews, and how that love eventually culminates in martyrdom. And then I'm going to look some main points about Christian leadership that are exhibited in the lives of Saints Peter and Paul. And the basic point there is a pretty obvious one, which is that Christian leadership is about loving, humble service to Christ by feeding his sheep. Okay, so that's what I'm going to be talking about. Now, to frame the talk, though, I want to talk about the three powers of the soul. And the reason for this is looking back at St. Peter and seeing how he had this desire to be with Christ, but he wasn't always able to fulfill that desire. And so I thought that we would look at this ancient idea. It's pre-Christian, but it was taken up by the Greek fathers in particular, I'm sure others also, but that the soul has three powers. The nous, which is the eye of the soul, that part of us which was given to us so that we can directly interact with God. Then there is the appetitive or desiring power. That's the part of a person that is given to them so that anything that will help them grow closer to God, they will desire it. They will bring it towards themselves. Then there is the irascible or insensitive power of the soul, which is probably easiest to just refer to as the angering power, but that's not really the only thing it does. And it was a sister, Nona, who in one of her books gives this illustration that I think is very simple and very, very helpful, you know, which again is the idea of the desiring power as that which helps me draw towards me that which is good, and the insensitive or angering power, which is that that helps me push away that which is bad. There are two illustrations of that. One that's a fairly common one is a charioteer and his horses. So the noose is the driver of the chariot. And when everything is in perfect working order, the horses, which are the desiring power and the angering power, go exactly where he wants them to go, and it would be a very beautiful sight to behold. When the charioteer and the horses are, you know, all together, all going the same direction. Another illustration that you sometimes hear in terms of the insensitive power, it's like the watchdog. If you have a watchdog in your house, there's two important things for that watchdog to know. It's who belongs there and who doesn't. So if the angering power is working correctly, then any time it sees an intruder, any time it sees something that is trying to tell me not to love God and to love other things over and above him, it attacks. But if it's not an enemy, then it's like, you know, that same fierce watchdog can be that same dog that will let the family baby, you know, crawl up on him and, you know, pull his ears. And he's not going to do anything because he recognizes that is not an enemy. So if that's the angering power, and so if you're thinking about like maybe a large household, then the desiring power could be somebody like, you know, the person who holds the purse strings, the treasurer, if it's that large of a house, you know, and you have servants. So again, when everything is going well, and the householder and the treasurer and everybody in the house and the dog are all, you know, on the same page, everything is wonderful. But when things go awry, then you have a problem. So you would have, like the charioteer, now you have a noose that has become blinded or at least severely vision impaired. And so he's going to have a whole lot of trouble controlling the horses. Because he's got a couple of problems. One is that because he can't see very well, he can't focus on his goal, who is Christ. And so it's like, I'm trying to focus on Christ, but I'm not 100% sure that is Christ. You know, it looks a lot like him, but I'm not that, you know, good of eyesight anymore. And the other problem that happens to us is what's called the scattered mind or the scattered noose. And the idea there is instead of being intently focused on Christ, we've got all these other things going around. So it's like here I am and I'm the charioteer and I'm trying to look at Christ, but there's some really, you know, interesting looking little flowers over there and I keep looking at them and I keep running into the ditch. Or there's, you know, some bad guys behind me and so I keep looking like that and I keep falling into the ditch. And so the basic difficulty here is that when the eye of my soul either can't see very well or is looking all over the place, and those two things are very interrelated, unfortunately, the horses are not going to be following him very well. And so then, you know, if if the horse knows that the charioteer doesn't know what he's doing, then the horse is going to try to do what he wants to do. And so then you have an out-of-control chariot, which would not be a pretty thing to see. So then if you're looking at the other illustration, that of the householder, when the householder loses knowledge of what's going on in his own household, the treasurer is going to start making friends with the wrong people, and he may also get fooled into thinking that certain things that he thinks are treasures are really useless, you know, like a fool's gold or a Confederate bill. Sister Thecla is not here. I'm sorry about talking about Confederate money, but but it's not useful to buy anything at this point in our lives. So the desiring power is now desiring the wrong things, or desiring the right things, but not knowing how to do it in moderation and properly. The watchdog now has this bad tendency to let enemies into the house and attack the children. So that's what happens when the noose is not properly aligned, not properly looking at God. And the problem is that we were all born this way because of the fall. You know, when I was born, I didn't, you know, take my first breath and thank God for it. And, you know, and thank God for, you know, the nourishment that came from my mother and for air and for everything. I mean, I came into this world squalling because my attention was not on God. My attention, to the extent that you can talk about a little child, you know, having attention, but they are, they do at some level, is on just staying alive. And so we have this basic problem where the world has become opaque. We can't see the light of God shining in everything the way he meant it to be and the way it was in the fall, before the fall, and then Christ makes even more so because now God has become man and the one who is the light shines in the world. But I don't see it because my eyes are still, you know, in pretty bad shape. And even, you know, and everybody to some degree is born sharing that just because, you know, we're born having to survive. You will hear in modern Orthodox thought this distinction between Western Christianity and Eastern Christianity, where they say that in Western Christianity, they think that we die because we sin. But in Eastern Christianity, we think that we sin because we die. And most of the times when people give you this broad generalization like that, that's exactly what it is. It's not 100% true. You know, because it's obvious that death is the result of sin. I think that's very biblical. I don't think you can pretend that isn't a biblical notion. If there had not been sin, we would not have died. But there is this very important concept of we sin because we die. And the way I understand that is that, you know, I am born into this world going to die. And because I'm going to die, I'm born pre-wired to protect myself. So, you know, I'm born like squalling to get somebody to take care of me because I can't take care of myself yet. And I'm born like if I see something that is going to keep me alive, I'm born grabbing for it. I'm not literally, but I'm born with that inclination once I'm at the point where I can, you know, to grab for that which will keep me alive. So we're born with our attention not on God, but on our own survival. And if And if I'm born that way, it's really, really, really easy for my desiring and angering powers to get out of kilter. Because if you need something to eat and I need something to eat and you're in my way, it's my now fallen natural inclination to, you know, get you out of the picture one way or another. And so it is the very, very rare person who is able, somewhat naturally, just to say, okay, you know, there are some amazing saints who were saints from very, very young, who were, you know, holy children of holy parents. And to some, you know, I don't know how that exactly that worked, but, you know, somehow or other, their desiring and angering powers weren't as much of a mess as ours are. But for me, I understand this concept very well that, you know, because I die, I am born trying to protect myself. And I go from a sort of a very physical kind of protecting myself to a psychological protect myself. So, you know, who am I? I'm the person who, you know, makes the best stuffed grape leaves on the face of the earth. And so if you, you know, dare tell me that your grandmother makes better grape leaves than I do, which my grandmother gave me the recipe and I know hers is the best, well then, you know, you've just challenged my life. Not truly, but in my mind. And so I get into all these problems because I'm trying to keep from dying. And of course, what St. Peter learned was you have to die to live. And the only way into eternal life is through the cross.